This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Take the Black Live, the only show on the internet that dares talk about the issues that no one else will talk about. We're talking like things like dragons, space lasers, dinosaurs, psychic children soldiers, Jedi yes. with light swords, made of light, traversing the galaxy, fighting for truth, justice, and what the American way was back in a long time ago. You ever like follow just a metaphor and just see where it takes you, and just like you don't know where you're gonna end up, but you're just gonna go there? I like doing that.
Yeah, that's pretty much the Star Wars prequels, what you just did.
Oh, the shade. Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining us. Hello, Martha. Hello, Julie. Hello, everyone out there in Cyber Take the Black Land. 6 out of 10. No, that's the
rough. That was rough.
You don't understand. The chaos is part of the fun. You just don't get my humor, Restream. 5 out of 10 for arguing. You know what? I can do that too. 15 out of 10 because great. And look at that. I'm also that person. Anyway.
Nice. That's official. It's in the chat. It's official.
It's in the chat. It's in the welcome thing. Tell me how you look. And hello, Christian. Anyway, we're here to talk about all those kinds of sci-fi fantasy crap we do every week. And Daniel, how are you doing out there in sunny San Diego?
I am doing very well. It is dreary in this place I am in, which is the opposite of San Diego. And yeah, we had a lot of good news this week. It's been Stranger Things all the time, but a few other exciting things going on. How are you, Dan? You ready to talk about stuff?
Yeah, I am. I mean, there's been quite a bit of stuff. Like Stranger Things came out. I watched the new episodes of The Boys coming out on Friday, which I remember back in our ranking thing, I would have put second.
You were
behind House of the Dragon. And I think that was the right choice after seeing this stuff. And we have some new House of the Dragon info. We're going to talk about it all, starting with our good friend, George R.R. Martin, who is
the one and only.
Who is out in force promoting House of the Dragon. It's freezing cold where Julie is. Again, Julie, I'm always curious about this. How cold is freezing cold in Australia? I'm just curious. That is a fair question. Not that there's
a competition. It gets down to the negative teens, negative 20s where I live in the winter. I want to know the answer.
Chicago too. We're negative double digits. It can be complete with ice storms that literally inspired George R.R. Martin to create The Wall. Was a ice storm in Chicago when he was here in college. Just saying.
I believe that.
But I am genuinely curious. And as Zach says, can't wait for The Boys. So jealous. We will give you our spoiler-free review in a minute here, Zach. It was pretty good. I'm looking forward to the rest. And I got like all the screeners too. But first of all, let's take a nice visit, with our buddy, George R.R. Martin, who's out in force promoting House of the Dragon. Good old George. George, can't beat him. Promoting the upcoming Game of Thrones prequel show, House of the Dragon, by going on, I don't know this, he went on Idris Elba's podcast he has with his wife, coupled them because
I didn't know that was a thing.
Why not have a podcast? Everybody has it. We have it. We can't talk. So everyone's got one. And according to Julie, it's about 9 Celsius to about 11. Oh God, we're such idiot Americans.
Okay.
Daniel, can you do Celsius to Fahrenheit in your head?
I can't.
nor can I.
I mean that's I'm sure it's freezing cold. Though. So what? It's gotta be 40s.
49 yeah,
Christian's
degrees,
got it. 49, you. 42. Thank you, Christian and Carrie. Okay.
Which does sound kind of nice. All right. But anyway, George R. R. Martin and the House of the Dragon showrunner, Ryan Condal, went on Idris Elba and his wife's podcast to discuss. That's 42. Everyone knows how to do it. Well, I'm a stupid American. I know how to do it. Thank you, Carrie. Thank you, Christian. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Richard. To discuss House of the Dragon. And there are some cool things they just kind of jawed about. You know, we're all excited for the show. But have you ever, tell me if you've heard this, Daniel, you and anybody else.
Okay.
Have you ever heard something like a producer adapting a thing say, we're going to adapt it, but we're going to make it my own. We're going to put our own spin on Interview with the Vampire, or we're going to really make Avatar The Last Airbender our own. they talked about whether House of the Dragon is going to be a faithful adaptation of the book. And it looks it's going to be more faithful than most things of this type are. So, for instance, Condal, who's the showrunner, not George Martin, but the guy actually running the new TV show, said, "For me, it was a trust building exercise." I don't know what it sounds like, so I can't do a voice. And the way
That's pretty good.
Thank you. And the way Miguel Sapochnik, the showrunner, and I approached the show was as fans of the original show. So what we're all trying to do is create the thing that we as fans would want to see. For me as a fan, that meant a very faithful adaptation. And then I was lucky in this case. I had George's ear. I shared every outline and I wrote with him for the pilot and every draft of the pilot I wrote. And then once that started getting going, HBO was happy. I think George was happy and knew there was a story that was, that the story was going and what the plan was. The upshot of this is that they're trying to keep it very, very faithful to the text, Fire and Blood. And I will say, like, seeing all the casting stuff, they have cast a very large amount of characters who are actually from the book, including like small ones that
they have.
I wouldn't have like batted an eye had they dropped, you know, like the Westerlings and like every single like a Harold Strong and like kind of those little side-ish characters that I just in another person's hands, it would have been a lot looser. Like, it looks like we're getting all the kids. Like, we're getting Aemon Targaryen and we're getting, you know, Aegon Targaryen. And I think there's like the impulse to combine some of these folk would have been strong. And it does look like they're being pretty comprehensive. What do you think about that, Daniel?
Yeah, I think that's a great choice. I think the temptation is there, you know, A Song of Ice and Fire and Westeros, those are really dense worlds. And the temptation is surely there to combine characters for simplicity.
Or just cut them.
I think, you know, Game of Thrones did do that as it went on. Early in the show, it didn't as much. And I think that that was... Honestly, I feel like that's something that set it apart a little bit, was it tried to get every little character and be faithful to the books, especially in the early seasons. Like season one, there were conversations that were just ripped straight out of the books, like line for line. So it's fascinating to me because Fire and Blood is not a it's not a straight story to adapt. That's something else they talked about a bit, right? Is like, where do you even start something like this? It's a maester telling a story that three other people said and trying to parse out the bits of truth from it. So there are all kinds of places they can and will probably fill in. What do you think about that? Do you think that is going to be, you know, when we talk about making it a showrunner or a producer making something their own, do you think that's kind of like a gray area? Because they can make it their own while still being faithful in a way most shows couldn't.
I mean, House of Dragon is so unique, right? So, okay.
Yeah.
I'll give you a counterexample. So Interview with the Vampire, they're making that show. Anne Rice, classic novel. Everyone loves it. And the early trailers are showing like it's the story, but they've just moved the time up like 100+ years. And
it's a weird choice.
I do think I kind of know why, because I think they want to avoid the hero being a slave owner. So they're going to move that up is my actual guess. It does stick out. It's like, oh, so like my original argument was if you're making a period piece either way, because the new period is still like early 20th century, it's still going to be a period piece. Why not just do the original period? House of the Dragon is so unique. Because again, the original book is so weird in that it's a history book. It's not a novel where it kind of sketches things. Occasionally, it'll throw like something they said, a piece of, but it's like a line, but no like conversations exactly. So you have to fill stuff in. And it's almost like the make it your own bit is baked right into this in a way that it isn't in something like Interview with the Vampire, which does have a set text. Like, everything happens A to B, B to C, C to E in a very distinct way that is set down in a book. And here, it's just not. So it's kind of, they can have their cake and eat it too. They can adapt everything that is there and still have lots of room to bind it where they will have to invent stuff because there's a lot that's not filled in. And they are doing cuts. I mean, like, again, Mushroom's apparently not going to be in it, or at least if he is, we have not seen him.
Yeah. And that is that is okay, I think. In terms of important characters, mushrooms important for Fire and Blood, not so important to the actual story being told, I guess, unless you were asking Mushroom's opinion, in which case he'd tell you he was crucial to every event. Yeah, I agree with that. Interview with the Vampire is an interesting case because I think you're probably onto something with, you know, they cast Jacob Anderson, yeah. Right, who played Grey Worm in Game of Thrones, right, as Louis. And moving it forward in time is an interesting thing in terms of potentially sidestepping the slave owner thing, because that is Louis's backstory in the book.
Someone pointed that out to me.
He ran out of plantation.
Like, oh, okay. I can actually say that. Yeah.
I could understand that choice. It's, you know, the jury's out on how it will, being in a different time period might change things. I don't really know how it might change things. I'm curious about that one. But yeah, Fire and Blood, House of the Dragon, it is set up to give that kind of creative freedom. And with people like Miguel Sapochnik, who I'm a big Miguel Sapochnik stan, that's great.
It is a really cool and probably pretty unique writer's exercise. By the way, Joanne says Mushroom should be there for comic relief. So just really quick before we move on, if you don't know. So this Game of Thrones prequel show, 200 years before the original series, Civil War, lots of dramatic events. It definitely has like the raw material to be a dramatic story. There's this character Absolutely. Named Mushroom, who is a dwarf. And a fool, a court jester for one of the main characters, Princess Rhaenyra. And he's kind of like a doofus, like he's an illiterate, he's making like these filthy jokes. And he does come off as like maybe slightly mentally disabled. I'm not quite sure if they're trying to depict him like that in the book, but like it kind of read between the lines. My guess is they don't want to include him because they have this like kind of barrier breaking character with Tyrion Lannister, who is a dwarf, but kind of goes against all the fantasy stereotypes of what a dwarf is, whether it's like the bellicose Lord of the Rings Gimli type or something like this, where he's kind of there to be an idiot for other people.
Yeah.
And they probably want to say like, oh, do we want to follow that up with this character who is there to dance for your amusement and just kind of plays into those stereotypes, even though he does break them in some ways, but not as richly as Tyrion does. And you know, maybe he's there. Maybe he just, he's in there and the trailers haven't seen him. He hasn't been to the trailers at all. It's possible. It's possible.
He's the secret main character of the show. We won't know till it airs. I could see them putting a nod to Mushroom in there somewhere.
Oh yeah.
But he's just not essential. He's not an essential character in the grand scheme of the narrative.
I don't know. That's a safe cut. I mean, he's there for a lot of stuff. I do think it's funny.
According to him.
I do think it's funny that, like, you know, fandoms are very quick to, point out what they don't like about something.
Sure.
The House of the Dragon fandom, the Game of Thrones fandom, has been saying, like, I don't like this costume thing that they're, or you know, some complaint about something or other. I haven't heard anybody.
Rhaenyra's outfit's too dark.
Yeah. I mean, the lighting. I haven't heard anybody complain about Mushroom being cut, because I think there's like this understanding that like, maybe that's for the best.
I have not seen a single person who's been like, this show, look at this show, checking off, diversity boxes, cutting out Mushroom, which those arguments cringe in the first place, but that's not one I've seen. Probably for the best.
Nicole with a good comment. Is Mushroom an actually very smart dwarf who portrays a seemingly stupid joker? Then that's fine. Yeah, like you could do it. There's probably a way to do it. There's also a way to just cut him out and save yourself a lot of trouble, which I think is what they're probably going to do.
With so many characters.
Probably. Watch him show up in the first episode.
You know what? That is, I would not be too surprised. I'd be surprised, but I'd be like, of course this was going to happen. So something else they talked about that I'm curious what your thoughts are. Because we talked a little bit about the timeline for this show, because we've seen in the trailer, the show is going to span the first season at least like 20 years. It's going to jump around in the timeline, but like we see events from over 20 years in the trailer. So George was talking about how they were trying to decide when to start the story. Yeah. He said, we faced the same issues with this. Indeed, it's been a major issue with me and some of the other writers who had preceded Ryan Condal on the project. We could not agree on exactly where to begin the story. I usually wanted to begin earlier and other people wanted to begin later. But I think I think we found a great place to start. Where do you think they're going to start on this?
I really don't know. Again, the book is so interesting. I just like thinking about George R. R. Martin arguing for like, well, why don't we begin in the Dawn Age and just like work our way up there? And it's like, no, what? We got to do a little bit later than that because you know we would.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, my guess is there will be flashbacks. Someone commented that hope there aren't too many, Nicole, but there have got to be some. I really don't know. I don't know if they're going to start at, you know, the Great Council of Harrenhal, work their way up, or it'll be a flashback. My guess is going to be a flashback. I think Rhaenyra will already
be alive. That'll be a flashback. Yeah. I mean, Rhaenyra is what? She's like 4 when that happens. I feel like that could be a flashback, but I do wonder if Rhaenyra as a teenager and Alicent as a teenager, if that's something we're going to see a bit more substantially, because we've also seen scenes of like Daemon around that time period. So I was surprised at how much we saw from those early years in the trailers.
Again, like he is trying to make it faithful, which is cool and good. Yeah. And yeah, I guess I wish it almost stands out that it's so faithful, because the norm with adaptations is to change it usually so much. And there are exceptions to that. Like, I think The Expanse was pretty faithful.
Because that had the book writers.
Yeah.
It had the book writers in the writer's room. So they kept the soul intact. But yeah, like you were about to say, Wheel of Time is another one where they have changed quite a bit.
They've made it their own.
The jury's now.
They've made it their own.
They have made that one their own for sure.
The Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power looks like, I mean, it's going to have to, because there's like nothing to fill in there. So they're going to make a lot of stuff up. That is the standard thing. So it's almost refreshing to see a show that clearly looks like it's going to try and stick as close to this very tricky text as possible. And I'm looking forward to it.
Same.
All right. Any other comments on the House of the Dragon of it all, Daniel?
You know, I think we've talked about it a good amount. Those are really the big things that stood out to me from that interview. You know, like as you said, it's got the opportunity to expand baked into it. And that's kind of one of the last things Ryan Condal said about it. It's interesting because you can really serve the adaptation, be extremely faithful to it, but also still bring a lot of invention to it just because of the way the story is told.
Cool.
This is a unique one. I'm really excited to see what they do.
Also,
there he is.
There's a scruff dog. I just realized I forgot Obi-Wan Kenobi in the outline, but we're going to talk about it. Don't worry.
Cool.
So,
I'm
sure you do. And I'm sorry about that. I forgot about it. So lots of TV going on. Really quick. Yeah. So last week we gave our kind of our spoiler-free review of the new season of Stranger Things, which we got to see in its entirety before it dropped.
We did. It was cool.
It was cool. I love doing that. And then telling people I can do it. Now that it's out, any follow-up you want to do with Stranger Things, or anybody out there, has anybody watched Stranger Things now that it's been out for a few days? Because
let us know in the chat if you if you don't want us to spoil things, I guess, because we can kind of talk with or without spoilers for this. I see Christian's got fingers in ear.
Okay, it'll be short.
Yeah.
I just want to say, because it really is all about the ending, isn't it? I mean, this season is really all about that last episode. Nicole's halfway through. I'll just say, get to the end, because that final episode really made it for me. There's this great twist involving, okay, Christian, my signal will be, we're done. We're done. That'll be it.
That's the signal.
There's a great twist involving Vecna. We won't talk about it too much, but it caught me off guard. Yeah. I didn't see it coming. Maybe because I was watching in quick succession. Perhaps I would if I hadn't. I'm not sure if anybody
did. The layers, man. The layers. That twist had so many layers to it that like I caught some of them, but there were like 4 different layers to the twist that came out at the end. So
it fixed some of the problems. Yeah. I mean, I am wondering if folk like were like, oh, I saw it coming. I haven't looked into that. Like the twist fixed some of the stuff that I had, some of the problems I had with the season. I thought it made me excited for what's coming, and I am cool to see more. But really, these episodes are all about that final episode, which is like an hour and a half long.
Yeah.
It's the length of a movie, and that twist involving Vecna 11. They deliver it really well. They punch it really good, and it was pretty tubular.
Yeah, it was. You know, the one other thing I did want to say about Stranger Things 4, something I really loved about this season is how much upside down stuff there is in it. The showrunners kind of talked about how you're going to start to get answers now that we're going toward the end game. And one way that I didn't really expect to see that manifest was like answers about the physical nature of the Upside Down. Mm-hmm. Because it's easy to forget, but like we haven't really spent time in the Upside Down since like season one was the last time characters really in there for more than like a scene or two.
Sure.
And we don't see it until, you know, relatively late in volume one. Presumably volume two is going to be basically all Upside Down or like a lot of Upside Down for some characters. But yeah, I loved the Upside Down stuff. It's good. I think this is one of the this season really feels like it's pushing boundaries in some meaningful ways to me, specifically in the formatting with the volumes and the episodes. It's good stuff.
They are going for it. They are reaching for that brass ring. They are climbing that mountain and they are not going to be told no. Also, it's hugely successful, which Netflix needed.
Yes.
Because they've had all this news about how Netflix is like losing subscribers. It's firing people. So it's nice for it to have this giant hit. But
totally. Hey, let me ask you something about this, about Stranger Things. I was thinking about this because I've been mulling over the episode.
I think we're good,
The budget.
No more spoilers.
We're good. Okay.
We're good,
this
Christian.
Is not a spoiler.
No more spoilers.
We heard before this season that the episodes were 30 million an episode, and we kind of all lost our minds about it because that is just outrageous for a season of television.
Sure.
When you think of them as movies, though, or short movies, some long movies, that's actually not an outrageous budget for a movie.
That's true.
Do you, so having seen volume one, do you think the budget is outrageous still, or do you think the way that this show toes the line between television and movies, it makes sense? What are your thoughts?
That's a big old question. I think it worked. I didn't think of it as movies. Like when I was watching, I didn't like it.
Okay.
It felt like a TV show. Maybe like a well-made TV show, but I've been so trained to like enjoy these slickly produced special effects heavy shows by now. It just feels like what TV is. It still felt like TV. Now 2.5 hours, that's gonna feel a little different to me. So I mean, it's carving out new space for itself in the TV movie hybrid space, and I'm sure that'll continue until the whole thing collapses.
Yeah, totally. And Christian's got a good comment in there. I think it has a special place for people that grew up through their teens in the 80s in the US. I will just say I have siblings. I was a baby in the 80s, but I have siblings who were teens in the 80s in the US. Mm-hmm. And that's so spot on. It's like a giant nostalgia trip for them. They love it because they recognize all the things from it.
I mean, like neither you nor I were like sentient in the 80s though. And we both like it. I mean, like, I think they said like, there's no way it's just nostalgia because there are there are way more people who like this show than were alive or like cognizant of the surroundings in the 80s. Like there's no way the show of Survivor was just appealing to 80s kids. Like,
well,
I'm not an 80s kid, but I like it.
Yeah, I think the thing, even more so than just appealing to 80s kids, is it takes the era of filmmaking that was prominent then, especially in the sci-fi horror space, like Aliens and Nightmare on Elm Street, which is the 70s, but the sequels were in the 80s.
Sure.
And like all those kinds of movies, and it wraps up the tone and the sensibilities of those movies into this show in a way that's introducing it to a new generation of people who might not have grown up with those movies. There's a scene in the third season where the kids are watching, I think, Dawn of the Dead in the movie theater. Mm-hmm. And I was shocked. Like the soundtrack of that movie sounded like Stranger Things. So it is like they're taking things.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was a huge fan of this season. I've been rewatching it since. So good stuff.
And Julie, I know that you don't like it, and that's fine. And we all just finished it here. That's what makes that's what makes Take the Black so just unique and diverse, and just everybody's in here having a good time.
Yeah.
As Nicole said, I'm an 90s kid and I like it. Sort of nostalgic sense. It's really just showing life pre-internet. Now, I agree with that. Like I wasn't around in the 80s. I was just old enough to remember what it was like before the internet was around.
Yeah.
Well, pretty much. I guess we had like really early, not really working internet back in my early
life.
Dial
up.
Oh God, good times. But but they don't even have that. So it's really, it's a piece of historical period piece prehistory. Anyway, speaking of
it's got a light bright instead.
Is that what that was? I mean,
that is. I wondered how many people would know what a light bright is, because I grew up in a household that felt like an 80s household because I'm the youngest. So we had stuff like that.
How many siblings do I never asked you that? How many siblings do you have? You don't have to answer that, by the way.
I have to.
Eight.
Different eras of family, but eight total.
Okay. Right? I will.
I'm sorry. That one a lot.
I didn't mean to ask that. I didn't know the first question. I asked you what in camera, and then you had to think. How many siblings do you have? I don't know.
I had to think. I grew up with four. We'll put it that way.
We'll talk more when we meet over the weekend.
Yeah.
Anyway, so about TV, Daniel, you're also watching a show called Star Wars Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I am.
And I have not yet. So why don't you regale us with your opinions? How are you enjoying, or are you not enjoying, Obi-Wan Kenobi, the new Star Wars show starring people?
Yeah, well, we'll keep it relatively light. You know, Obi-Wan Kenobi bringing Ewan McGregor, Hayden Christensen, and who knows who else back from the prequel movies. Yeah. There are cameos out the wazoo. The show features a young Princess Leia, which I think was a great choice, even if they should stop having people chase her, because the chase scenes with her look ridiculous.
Really?
they are not good. Even the actress is good, but the chase scenes are not. What I will say is I really, really was let down by the first two episodes. Like, I love the prequel movies. I grew up with them. I went into this really wanting to like this series and was super disappointed in the first two episodes. They were a little all over the place. They were a little boring. I caught myself like drifting. The writing was not good. Episode three was fantastic. Nice. So my feeling is that Disney and Lucasfilm rushed getting us to episode three, because they originally were going to do it one a week, and then they put two out last week instead on a Friday, and then gave us a new one on today, on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So that's three episodes in less than a week. And I think that's because they knew episode three is really the hook.
The meat.
If you make it to that point, you're going to want to finish the show. Three features Darth Vader. With James Earl Jones. The dude's 91.
91 years young.
Feels special because he's in his 90s. Who knows how many more times he'll voice Darth Vader. And this is a Darth Vader and Obi-Wan Kenobi story. Like, it is about their relationship. And I think it has maybe the scariest Vader scenes, some of the best Vader scenes in all of Star Wars. He was terrifying in this episode. So yeah, it's worth giving a shot, if only to see the one that came out today.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I just haven't gotten around to it. I'm probably going to watch it. Can I ask you this? Talking about nostalgia and stuff, is it possible that you enjoyed it so much because your favorite action figures from your childhood were up there smacking each other? Or is it really that good?
No, it's totally the nostalgia. It is entrenched in the nostalgia.
Okay, that was honest.
Yeah, well, with something like this, it's hard for it not to be, right? Because it's set between the prequels and the original trilogy of Star Wars. So like, unlike The Mandalorian, where it's like, ooh, can they nod to different things? Here are Easter eggs for Star Wars fans. This is like, it feels like a story to bridge those two trilogies. So it is more dependent on them than anything else, I think, that has come out in the Lucasfilm TV space. So yeah, I think it's super dependent on the nostalgia, but I will say that the show itself was asking better questions and doing a better job this time around. Like, in general, it felt like a better show this week. Cool. It explored like whether the Empire was a good thing or not, and how different people look at that differently depending on their worldviews, in a way that's I was surprised, because normally you see the Empire is pretty one note. The Empire, the bad guys.
Sure.
So it was cool to see that kind of Leia grew up since the Empire's been around. So it's natural for her to say things like, aren't they doing good things? Yeah, I think it's definitely rooted in the nostalgia, but this was a good episode either way.
Good. I'm glad to hear about that. By the way, Zach says on YouTube, didn't know about James Earl Jones. Yeah, pretty nuts, right? Still haven't watched episode three. Yeah. I'm disgusted by some of the messages that Moses Ingram has gotten. That being said, yeah. I'm not a fan of her character, Reva, which is fine. I mean, like, as long as you separate, like, I don't like the character from how dare a black woman be in this. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. But
those
yeah.
are different things.
Those are different things.
For sure. I am right there with you, Zach. I am not the biggest fan of Reva. I'm excited to I'm kind of curious where they're taking her because it feels like there might be something more interesting. But yeah, totally disgusted by kind of the treatment from fans of Star Wars.
I mean, I'm a little surprised that Disney is being so strident out there and just like upfront with their anti-racist messaging. Like, frankly, I didn't think they had it in them. But clearly they talked about it beforehand. And that's a good direction for them to go.
Totally agree. It's the kind of thing, you know, I feel like they've had enough practice or this isn't their first time having this happen.
It ain't their first time at the rodeo.
John Boyega, and they dropped the ball pretty bad on it.
And Kelly Marie Tran.
So they're getting, unfortunately, more chances to do better.
Yeah, I will try and check it out. And Julie says she's watching The Time Traveler's Wife, which she is enjoying very much. Nicole thinks it has some weird humor. I've heard mixed things about it. That was when I was going to watch, but then I got these screeners for The Boys Season 3, and I've been watching a bit of that.
So tell us about that. How is the, like, spoiler free, obviously. It's spoiler not out free. Yet.
Not a spoiler in sight. Not a single
not a single spoiler. Is it everything everyone is saying? Will I see things I can never unsee on this season of The Boys? How is it?
Yes, it is. So they released the first three episodes on Friday. I've seen the first three, and I have a bunch of others I can watch later. The great thing about one of the great things about The Boys to me is it has this earned reputation for being this utterly filthy, depraved, grotesque, like just a Caligula style disgustatorium. And right out of the gate,
disgustatory.
I need to make new words to describe how awful that is. In the first episode, they have a scene. This is a true story. I'm watching the episode. I'm eating dinner. I'm not going to say what happens, but this scene was so disgusting. I had to stop. I can't have food in my mouth and watch this. And they built a whole set just for this one hideous bit. And they definitely have the reputation of pushing boundaries when it comes to, like, I have not seen this on TV, in a movie. I haven't read about it. Like, the Marquis de Sade could never. He would be like, this is too much. So again, what's good about the show is, and by the way, The Boys is a show about superheroes. If I were writing the log, I would say it's a superhero show for people who hate superhero shows, because it's very much superheroes are clearly modeled after Superman, Captain America, but they're all complete ass-tards, and they're just the worst of the worst of the worst. They are corrupt. They are egomaniacal, they're power hungry, they're maladjusted, and they're the ones who will take down. And the heroes are kind of the guys who are trying to stop them and expose their corruption and get them out of the world. But yes, Nicole, you are correct. I haven't gotten to that point yet.
That is true.
So what I like is The Boys gets you in the door with that kind of gross stuff. And this scene was so gross. But the first three episodes, mostly if you take a step back, like, it is just a very well-written, solid, like, piece of storytelling. Like, the characters are all distinct. They're all well activated, the personalities. The plot is easy to understand. You can, like, see the personalities clashing. It has a great sense of humor about itself. It's very self-referential, very poke fun at it. We're drenched in satire. Like, they go to Vaughtland, which is just Disneyland this time. It's a very obvious dig, and they get lots of digs in at that. It loves that stuff. It loves to kind of poke fun at America, mythologizing itself with sort of, World War II mythologizing greater generation stories. There's definitely some Trump nods in this one, which there would have had to be. There's no way to get that out. But at the end of the day, despite all, like, kind of the cutesy satire and the abhorrent visuals that they dream up and depict in detail, it is a solid foundation of drama and character, which is a great combination, because you get it's not just about the shiny surface horror show. It has like a heart and some lungs and a spleen and everything else you need to be a human body in there too.
And you may see them.
Oh yeah, you will. You'll see all of it. It's gonna burst everywhere. I mean, like, not everything works perfectly. They do kind of like rush through the plot sometime to, like, you know, that thing in a plot where you're like, we need the person to do the thing, so send them after the crystal skull of Mongol Town or whatever. Just write something and have them go do it.
Okay.
There's a little bit of that. But
in this season particularly,
I mean, not that bad. There are some scenes where I'm like, they figured that out real quick, but I get it. They want to move on to the next thing so they can have Benson Eccles show up and do a scene that apparently was so horrible he refused to do it. It's Christian ass. Yep,
that is a true thing.
Which, again, I haven't gotten to that point. I can fully believe it.
Yeah.
I mean, the actors involved in this, no, it wasn't that bad. I'm sure there'll be other gross stuff as I go through. But again, the appeal here to me is the solid story underneath the boundary pushing, I've written enough synonyms for this, carnival of horror.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive, really, that The Boys is able to be such a well-written, good, solid show while still working in that level of commentary, because there's always been a lot of commentary, but it's never felt like they shoehorned anything in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even right down to, you know, one of the writers went and saw Avengers Endgame and she got really frustrated with, like, kind of the charge of lady superheroes in Avengers Endgame, because it wasn't done, it was very
pandering.
It felt patronizing.
Yes, it did.
So she came back, was really mad about it. And then they worked that into season two of The Boys with, like, the, girls, I don't remember what it was, like, girls get it done.
Yeah. That was clever.
Yeah. It was so clever. And The Boys has always been really good about doing that without ever sacrificing, like, the integrity of the show, or, like, putting the actual story they were telling on the back burner for the sake of commentary. And this season, okay, so we won't say, there's one particular plot beat that has been talked about a lot. We won't say it. Herogasm is the name of the comic arc that they are doing in this season of the show. And they basically said they've reached a point of success where Amazon can say no to them less and realize they're one of their biggest shows. So they gave them more license to just do whatever gnarly stuff they're going to do in every season.
That's a good word for it. Yeah. Love to get into a later season where there's more confidence and money. And this show is a show that can do some interesting things with confidence and money. So some shows don't deserve it. Some shows, like, you give... to me, this is me personal opinion. You give Westworld a giant budget, they're not going to use it well. They're just going to, like, go down a rabbit hole of nonsense. But this show can use it. As far as the satire goes, you know why it doesn't interrupt things? Because it's not that far off. Like, Daniel, imagine.
If
we lived in a world where a massive entertainment conglomerate tried to pander to audiences and use things like feminism and racial justice as a way to get past the defenses and get more money and here's the bottom line. Who would do that? There's no one who would do that. This is impossible to believe.
Yeah, that's definitely, like,
it's
unrealistic.
Not that far what they're doing here.
No, it's not.
Which I think is why it works.
And you're right. That is why it works. Especially because it's especially not far off for the current moment we're in. You know, there's something to be said for a show that is satiring corporate superheroes while superheroes are the biggest movie television corporation franchise in the world. Yeah. Like,
I wonder how they imagine that. I wonder about the stuff. Where do you get your ideas?
Yeah. So it makes total sense. The Boys is it was a scrappy show that has, like you said, about kind of earning the budget or them being able to do good things with it.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me a little bit of Stranger Things in that way, because when you go back to season one, that show clearly didn't have an enormous budget. Might not have been small, but it wasn't like it is now.
Sure.
And it's worked its way up to warrant that level of trust. And The Boys is similar to me, where season one was like a total shot in the dark. This was either going to be great or a total bombshell, because what the hell even is this gnarly, nasty show? But it's just been so good that it's now at this point where do you think it's Amazon's biggest show right now? It's got to be in its top, like, five at least.
Probably. Amazon Probably. I'm not sure Amazon has like a Stranger Things, Game of Thrones size hit. Like The Boys is a big genre offering, but The Boys is so hardcore and so self-referential and so kind of meta. I wonder if there's like a bit of a limit. I don't know, man. I haven't been through Jeff's files.
It definitely doesn't, you know, it can't hit the same. It will never hit the same kind of mainstream appeal as some of it, as like a Stranger Things, because it's just not accessible the same way that something like Stranger Things is.
I feel like
that's what Amazon's trying to do with Rings of Power.
Wheel of
Julie
Time,
points out Wheel of Time. Yeah. Amazon wants that. They want a Stranger Things.
They want it so bad.
Yeah. And The Boys is one of the best things they've gotten in that swing, even if it's too narrow because of how extreme it is.
But I don't know. Maybe it's watch like kind of you. I actually really don't know. By the way, before we move on, Christian asks, does that gross scene talking about involve a manscaper? We did advertisement for a while. No, Christian, but you are in the right area of the body. Okay, so before...
All right, The Boys.
Boys season 3 this Friday, baby. Any other things you want to mention before we move on? By the way, anything you guys are watching out there you want to talk about that we haven't brought up yet? Brought up the time traveler's wife. Anything else before we go on to the lightning round, the climax of episode?
Gosh, I don't think so. I've mainly been watching the things we've been talking about.
Yeah.
You know, trying to think of other things that have gotten watched. Oh, one last thing I'll say about Stranger Things, because we talked about this last week, about how this season leads into a rewatch of season 1 perfectly.
Okay.
Now I can say it because it's out. We can spoil. This is like early game spoilers. The 11 flashbacks in season 4 of Stranger Things take place like 4 years before Stranger Things season 1. That's why it leads so perfectly into a rewatch. Everything for her in season 1 is after what we see in season 4. That's all I'll say.
The tiny child CGI in 11 is quite convincing. As Christian says, he's watching Chops. Nice. Oh, really? Oh, cool, Christian. So your coworker's son won the round of Chops. Nice. Gentleman Jack is okay. Nice. Not great, but okay. Yes, don't watch that. I'm watching Hacks. I'm watching Barry. And I'm watching a RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars All-Winner season. Jinx nice. Monsoon for life. For life. Okay.
Nice. Yeah, no, I've just been in the Stranger Things rewatch. I'm clearing season 3. Watched a little bit of The Circle last night. It's pretty ridiculous. That's a fun show.
Which one is that? Is that the one where like you're all in separate rooms or something and you have to decide who's real and who's not?
It's a social media game. Yeah, they're all in a hotel. They don't get to actually see each other.
Okay.
Some people are pretending to be other people. They're catfish, so they have a different profile. This season, they have the Spice Girls on, pretending to be a person in the two of the real Spice Girls. Yes, pretending to be in the
Ginger,
game.
Baby, Scary?
Baby and Scary Spice are in this season of The Circle, and they are boundlessly entertaining. They're great.
Go for that.
Yeah, but... I guess, shall we lightning? Unless anyone's got more shows they want to talk.
Well, Nicole says she's looking forward to Peaky Blinders. But nice. Till then, yeah, let's do the Wick News lightning round. And by the way, the first like half of this, just to warn you, is all Star Wars stuff. Because Star Wars had its big Star Wars celebration this past weekend.
Yeah.
And just like they announced like 30 jillion things. So I just put it all in here. So we're going to through a bunch of Star Wars stuff and then a few other things to round it out. And I don't remember if I arranged this in any kind of way. So why don't I just ask you a question and see what happens?
Sounds good.
Daniel, Andor, a Star Wars show about Cassian Andor, who's a guy from Rogue One. It's already been renewed for a second season. And the first season will premiere on August 31st. You an Andor head? You a Cassian boost?
I am not. I could care less about Cassian Andor, but I think this show might actually be good. It's going to be 12 episodes these first two seasons each.
That's a lot.
Yeah. It's a lot, and I feel like they've got kind of a solid vision behind it. It's the director from Rogue One as the showrunner. I'll give it a chance. I'm not excited for it, but it might be good.
Cool.
That's my official stance.
Very hype.
Yeah, such hype. Much wow. Okay, Dan. So a Star Wars anthology show called Tales of the Jedi is coming.
Yeah, it is. So anthology, Tales of the Jedi, different episodes, different Jedi. Let's follow Qui-Gon Jinn for episodes, follow up on for episode. Man, there's a lot of Star Wars stuff. Man, there's a lot.
There's a lot.
How does it not get all lost? I guess just like on 20 for this year round. It sounds fine.
Yeah.
I'm trying to like get it like perfect. Okay. Here's an
that was
okay.
pretty good.
Thank you.
This is an
Yeah, this is a weird one.
This is an interesting one.
Another new Star Wars show. It's called Skeleton Crew. It stars it's about a bunch of kids who get lost in the galaxy and find a way home to another planet. And Jude Law is also there. I don't know. It's like the headmistress.
Headmistress Jude Law. Yeah. And it's being directed by John Watts, who did the Spider-Man No Way Home, that trilogy of Spider-Man movies. This feels a little like the Star Wars attempt to do a Stranger Things show with a bunch of kids doing kid stuff and one very famous adult. I there's so much Star Wars stuff.
Yeah.
And we're not even done. Excited about all of it.
There's one more. Yeah. Okay. Hit me.
Okay. This one, I think, I mean, it's more Star Wars stuff. Could be cool. The Acolytes, another upcoming Star Wars show. Surprise, really? Surprise.
Wow, really?
You might never have expected. This one will be set during the High Republic era, which is around 100 years before Palpatine is even born. Mm-hmm. And it's going to tell the story, a story, from the perspective of the Sith.
Now, see, like, I think this one sounds cool. I think there's like a disservice done to it by having so many, you know, like there are some of these that sound like neat shows, but there's just so much Star Wars shows. I don't know how you can have passion for them all and not have it take over your life. I prefer that they like choose a couple and then just cut the rest.
Yep. Yep. Could not agree with that more.
Okay.
Overflowing the market. Maybe not the best way to keep hype.
We'll see. All right. Now we move on from Star Wars stuff. Finally.
To other Lucasfilm stuff.
Yes. At the same. So we're like adjacent. At the same convention, they set off a trailer for a new show based on the 1980 something fantasy movie Willow, starring Warwick Davis the dwarf sorcerer. It's going to be a whole TV show now. He's still in it. Premiering November 30th. Val Kilmer is not involved.
I'm not super excited for this, but I think it's actually, this makes more sense than a lot of these other things. Apparently there are Willow books and there are like a whole bunch of them that go past the movie. So I know fans of those books who wish that they made more Willow stuff after the movie.
Cool.
So I don't know that they are adapting the books for this show, but it's an interesting idea.
It work.
Oh, can we switch these next two?
Yes, we absolutely can. Yes.
All right. Splendid. So His Dark Materials season 3, someone attached to that show said the Mulefa design will please some, disappoint others. What are the Mulefa, Dan?
Okay. The Mulefa from His Dark Materials are these weird alien creatures that, you know, like sometimes in like a sci-fi show, they'll have aliens that basically amount to human beings, different color skin, weird ears. Like the Mulefa are so weird. They have like these weird like elephant skeletons and they roll on these wheels that they pick up from seeds that fall from a giant tree, and they have trunks and like diamond bones. I love how weird they are. And we're going to see them in the third season very soon. And it's going to be, I'm very curious to see how they do it because they are truly alien. I'm going way over. I don't care because it's so weird. I got to stop.
Do you though? Do you?
You know what I mean? Like, just like it's a crazy alien species that's never made contact with anybody. Oh, their ears are pointy. That's how they're different from us. So I appreciate it when someone goes the extra mile and says something's truly different. So I'm looking forward to that. Sorry, everybody.
Sweet. I can't wait.
Okay. And this one is for you. Netflix is developing a television show based on the Sony video game Horizon Zero Dawn.
Yeah, I could see Horizon. I love those games. I could see it working well as a show. I think their challenge here is going to be to make a show that matters because the games are so good and their storytelling is really good and their world is really great. Mm-hmm. It's hard to imagine how Netflix can improve on that. So that's kind of the challenge for them.
I know, Julie, I'm very sorry. So Daniel, you get one overflow if you want.
Okay. Play Horizon Zero Dawn. That's my overflow. It's a good use of time, and Oh, yeah. I guess we can say it's a post-apocalypse with robot dinosaurs. We'll leave it there.
Does sound nice.
Very cool sci-fi reason for those dinosaurs. Okay. Dan, so an unburnable copy of The Handmaid's Tale went on auction to protest book banning.
Yeah. So Margaret Atwood, author of The Handmaid's Tale, lots of other great books. Pretty sweet video. She's like has a flamethrower and is burning The Handmaid's Tale, which is about a post-apocalypse where women are kind of subjugated and turned into like birthing farms. There is a rise in book banning in the US. There's getting some passion about it. So it's a cool way to draw attention to it. And finally,
kudos, Margaret.
Finally, we have one courtesy of our producer. Daniel, Our Flag Means Death, the pirate show on HBO Max, has been renewed for season 2.
Yeah, yay. You know, it was a cute, fun show. I think it's got great LGBTQ rep. It's nice to see something like that in a mainstream pirate show like this on HBO Max. It was fun. I'm glad it's getting a chance to do another season.
Yeah,
I think it deserves
I'll watch that. It was nice.
Yeah, totally.
There we go. And that was under
the buzzer.
We fully made it up. We made it all
up. We won.
And that is our show, people. We're here every single week at Wednesday at 4 p.m. Central Standard Time, streaming live on the Winner is Coming Facebook page and the Winner is Coming YouTube page. And remember, a dragon has 2 legs, a wyvern has 4 legs, and a hopeless nerd can tell the difference. Have a good night and goodbye.
Take care, y'all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.